This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, April 16th, 2010. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the new Lilly Prize winner. Earlier this week, the Poetry Foundation announced the winner of the 2010 Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize. It's $100,000 that's given out annually to a living American poet for a lifetime of achievement. Previous winners include Fannie Howe, W.S. Merwin, Kay Ryan, all big names in American poetry. This year, the winner is Eleanor Ross Taylor. Haven't heard of her? Well, I hadn't either until this award. I'm sitting in the Upper West Side New York apartment, it's fairly noisy here, of the poet Jean Valentine, who knows Eleanor Ross Taylor's poems quite well. She's a big fan, and we're going to talk about a few of her poems. So, Jean, Eleanor Ross Taylor is not totally obscure. In the late 90s, she won a big prize from the Poetry Society and some other awards. But how do you explain a poet of her caliber having such a small reputation?
Well, she hasn't taught and she hasn't given readings and she hasn't done any of the usual career things. She doesn't hang out with a lot of poets. She was married to Peter Taylor and knew a lot of the poets of his their generation.
Peter Taylor, the novelist.
Peter Taylor, the novelist, yeah. And she was good friends with Alan Tate and Randall Jarrell and Robert Lowell. She wasn't not running with poets, but she was indifferent to the career part of things. Jarrell urged her to write the poems and went out of his way to even send the poems to magazines and then get them into a book. And when he won the National Book Award in the same year that her first book came out, he said publicly he wished it had gone to her. He thinks she's a better poet than he is.
When did you first read her?
When that book came out.
Which was in the early 1960s.
It was 1960. It was Wilderness of Ladies.
And what drew you? You liked it from the start? What drew you to it?
I adored it. Hmm. Yeah.
Tell me why.
Yeah. Because she's unlike anyone else. She's a complete original. And Jarrell, I loved Jarrell too. And so his praise meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And he compared her to Hardy and Dickinson. She was later compared to Marianne Moore and to Elizabeth Bishop. And I think all those things are true in some way or other. And so I loved her for her originality, for her lack of career. I read her before I had a book, and it was comforting to me that a star could be in the sky without any of the footwork, in a way.
Now, I actually had a chance to meet her last week. I went down to Falls Church, Virginia, where she now lives. And she's quite old now, and her memory isn't as good. But I recorded her reading some poems. Do you like reading poetry a lot?
No, not at all.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah. Well, it's just old stuff. I'm too familiar with it.
So we're not gonna actually play those poems, because I think you could probably deliver them a little bit better than she can right now. I wanted to get you to read a poem called Where Somebody Died, and it's very clear what's happening in this poem. It's about being in a room where somebody who's now dead used to live, and the speaker reflects on that. Is there anything else to say about this poem before you read it?
It's pretty clear, I think, the way it unfolds, but maybe if later we think of questions, we could talk about it. I'll read it first. Is that okay?
Yeah. So here is Where Somebody Died, by Eleanor Ross Taylor.
The self refuses to appear in this bare place. It fears that mute chair and the still window. The sunlight scares it. There might rise up a sound. The door doesn't like to move, and the crow out there hesitates. He knows a hole flown into by mistake would make a bite of him. What was sits standstill in the chair, hangs stunned against the dry-eyed light. Nobody in sight. Inanimate things still lifeless. This room's so empty, I doubt I'm standing here. There can't be room for me and total emptiness. Only some far-off sounds persist. The brute truck over the interstate. The flames in the incinerator chewing his old vests.
somebody has died, yet the speaker in the poem is suffering some absence of self at the same time.
Well, I think that's lifelike, really. It made sense to me because something very primitive happens to yourself, I think, when someone very close to you dies, and you might refuse to appear.
The self refuses to appear in this bare place. It fears that mute chair and the still wonder.
I understood that. Mm-hmm. And also, even the crow, I mean, even the sunlight.
The sunlight scares it. There might rise up a sound. The door doesn't like to move, and the crow out there hesitates. He knows a hole flown into by mistake would make a bite of him.
She's very dramatic and exact here. I suppose it's the dread of death. Death would get the crow, death would get me.
Mm-hmm.
This room's so empty, I doubt I'm standing here.
The emptiness is so huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then she imagines the flames.
The flames in the incinerator chewing his old vest.
Something terrible has happened. Somebody very close has died, yet there is no self-pity here.
None. She has absolutely none.
Not only no self-pity, but no sentimentality.
None. Absolutely. Those are things I've always loved about her, too.
Yeah.
And yet lots of feeling. Because sometimes you have people who are unsentimental, but they're so far from it that there's no feeling either. But with her, you get all the feeling, but no sentimentality. Not even a question mark is sentimental in here.
You know, I asked her why she wrote. What was her pleasure in writing? And she said,
I think I just wrote them because they were a game I was playing in my mind.
But that seems to indicate a poet who is more into the craft of the poem. But this poem in particular, Where Somebody Died, shows the great emotional scaffolding of her poems. This is somebody who was moved to write because of emotion. She's not putting together a puzzle here.
No. That might be the way she would present it, though. Again, that's a kind of, I'm not going to tell you everything, you know?
Yeah.
Which could be modesty and also privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But from the very first, I mean, Jurel said her intense emotions. I don't know if that's his exact phrase. I could look it up. But that was her first book. Those were her first poems. I mean, the wild, deep, intense emotions.
Let's try another poem.
Sure.
There's a poem that really struck me called Pain in the House. Can you tell us a little bit about this poem to set it up?
I don't really know the background of this, but she has said publicly that she thinks her poetry, her late poetry, is involved with her own ghost. And I think this is not involved with her own ghost, but it's involved with the pain that she feels as an older person. And I think it's probably pain of all kinds. She mentions that it's unhappiness as well as, I think, physical pain.
Let's hear it. Here's Pain in the House by Eleanor Ross Taylor.
Feeling her head pick up her body, question mark. Blurred, misstamped question mark. Snakes out of bed. Trying to jiggle unhappiness as little as possible. Not to wake pain. Not to raise a shade. If raising a shade in the dark wakes pain. Under the shade, the stars are awake, smiling, ready to frown on unhappiness. And the happiness of the unconscious is scurrying already from the knife edge of light, pain's nightlight, waiting under the door across the hall. Dread's square hair stiffens, her feet have corners, trying to trick the stairs out of their creaking and the house out of groaning before coffee, before resurrection. Death before resurrection is hard. Breakfast and the stars belong first. Plenty of time to die all day when everything does groan and unhappiness shakes itself out like a musty old mare all over the house. Dread says to herself, serves me right for leaving home, for learning to read, serves me right for children and menopause and cosmetic surgery and elation in gin. I must travel back through the shade and the black holes and the frowns, through drink and tampon and alphabet, to the kitchen and mother and dad, and the morning of the resurrection was the first day.
What does she mean by the morning of the resurrection was the first day? She mean going back in the speaker's life? What do you make of that?
I thought I heard an echo there, and I looked it up, and it's the first day of creation. God says, the Bible says, he did this and he did that, and the evening and the morning were the first day.
Mm-hmm.
She's echoing that very consciously, but I think it's like her creation as a child. That's what I'm going back to.
Right. She's taking this...
Right back to her birth, kind of, from her death.
Dred says to herself, serves me right for leaving home, for learning to read. Serves me right for children and menopause and cosmetic surgery and elation and gin.
It's painful. It serves me right for leaving home, for learning to read. In other words, she's being punished for growing up, for becoming a woman and growing old.
Yeah.
Oof.
I must travel back through the shade and the black holes and the frowns, through drink and tampon and alphabet, to the kitchen and mother and dad, and the morning of the resurrection was the first day.
Even before she learned the alphabet, leaving infancy.
It's as if the price that she's paying for the life that she has, the speaker, is pain.
Pain. That's right. Yeah.
Oof. Now, it's impossible to read the words menopause and tampon in a poem and not think that something feminist is afoot in the poem. Yet I don't have a clear idea what the feminism is here. Is this a specific pain that a woman would feel? Is there something specifically feminine about the pain in this house?
It's a really good question. I think myself that she writes as only a woman could write. She would deny feminism, but to me, one of the glories of finding her in 1960 was that she was writing about a woman's life. And Jarrell, I don't think we were using the word feminist then, but Jarrell said, a woman is in a cage and a woman herself is a cage. And he actually learned a lot from Eleanor's first book, which showed up in his book that he was writing at the same time and that he wrote in 1965, last book, The Lost World.
And did that book include The Woman at the Washington Zoo?
Exactly.
Which is very much about a woman being caged in her body.
You're absolutely right. That's probably where those lines come from. And he wrote many poems in the persona of a woman.
So she's won this big award now. And do you think the time is ripe for her to have a larger audience? Do you think she will develop a big audience?
I think the time is always right for her because she's been a poet's poet, as they say. And she's had a ferociously enthusiastic audience, but it hasn't been as wide as it should be.
Yeah, maybe this will change it.
And that's the big news, I think, about this award, is that she'll have more readers.
Thanks, Jean.
Thank you.
Jean Valentine is a poet in New York City. Her most recent book is called Little Boat, and it's published by Wesleyan. Eleanor Ross Taylor is the winner of the 2010 Ruth Lilly Prize. A portfolio of her poems will be published in the May issue of Poetry Magazine. Her new and selected poems, published by Southern Messenger Poets, is called Captive Voices. Do let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.